And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
60 minutes. No, he's not an actor. He's an honest-to-God police captain. So honest-to-God that he risked his career to free an innocent man on death row. Then it's Murder, She Wrote, starring Angela Lansbury.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Wasn't he pointing the other way?
Of course, people do go both ways.
This is Nerder, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. And I'm Dave Dufour, and that means it's Nerder, She Wrote. Joining me, as always, Seth Partnow, Mo DeKeel. What's up, fellas?
Do you time the pause between Nerder, She Wrote, or do you just vary it every time?
Well, super producer Jade Hoy sent me a clip of Pat Summerall.
Sent you a clip
of Pat Summerall? Me a clip of Pat Summerall and John Madden, and Pat Summerall making the toss for Angela Lansbury in Murder, She Wrote. And he holds the pause. And so I'm trying to, let's just say we'll pay homage to Pat Summerall there and Angela Lansbury.
Oh, honest to God that he risked his career to free an innocent man on death row. Then it's Murder, She Wrote, starring Angela Lansbury.
With the comma. Commas matter. We care about punctuation on this program.
Because we're nerds.
Guys.
Although
we're not pedants. My editors would like to refute the fact that I care about grammar. I just need to let them give them the shout out. They would definitely, if they heard this, they'd be like, Mo cares about grammar. What are we talking about?
The last week continues the string, guys. The NBA is a lot of fun right now. It's still random. Sadiq Bey had a 50-point game, which I think
against Orlando
was a nice exclamation point on last week's show for us. Yes, against Orlando, who's what, they've given up 4 50-point games or something this season.
Terrible teams, terrible at defense and terrible at defending somebody. Oh, shocking.
It's weird. But some of the teams are just doing fun stuff. And we've talked about Cleveland a ton this year. We mentioned how they play three bigs and how crazy that is. Guys, the New Orleans Pelicans have just surprised the hell out of me. I'll just be honest here. I didn't expect much out of them. Zion being hurt and hasn't played all year and such a huge gaping hole in their lineup. Not a ton of talent. They started 1-12. Under new coach Willie Green. And they're now in the play-in. I mean, this is a team that's basically playing 500 ball since that 1-12 start. He's playing Jackson Hayes as a tall ball four next to Jonas Valanciunas. And they were doing that with Brandon Ingram at the three, very similar to the Cleveland Cavaliers, very similar to the Memphis Grizzlies. And the teams that we've actually really thought have been showing their coaching smarts, the Pelicans are getting a coaching clinic every single night from Willie Green. He's coaching his ass off. The Pelicans are fun. You guys agree?
Yeah. I mean, it's
isn't it cool? Listen, Jackson Hayes as a small or as a tall ball four, I never would have thought about this 2 seasons ago.
So this is sort of a comparison, something, a spot that we'll get to this later. A spot that we're kind of looking at in the playoffs is Philly for the umpteenth year in a row, Philly with Joel Embiid off the floor. And I think the larger point here is play your good players, don't play your bad players, figure it out. Like, you know, a big part of like New Orleans' run has kind of been Garrett Temple sort of exiting the rotation because, as you know, as wonderful a teammate and a solid player as he's been, he's 35 years old and kind of can't do it anymore. And, you know, that So let's move him out of the rotation, someone else in. Okay, it's positionally weird. We'll figure it out.
And it has been awkward. But the other thing that has been so impressive, Mo, they added CJ McCollum, and it's worked perfectly. It's been seamless.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's rolling really quite well. I think it's really flown under the radar how good New Orleans has been after their terrible start, because every time we talk New Orleans, what do we talk about?
Zion.
We're Zion. That's it. And that's the end of the discussion. We don't really get into everything that they're doing. Like, when you look at the fact that they started, what, 1-12? The start of the season, and they're in the play-in tournament right now. Like, they've been basically playing 500 ball or better since then. Like, it's you're looking at that stuff, and you'd kind of just say, if he did this at the start of the season, they didn't have this 1-12 start, we might be looking at Willie Green as coach of the year.
I actually think I want to flip the logic a little bit here, because Matt Moore made a similar argument. If it wasn't for the 1-12 start, guys, I think that the 1-12 start is a great place to begin the argument for Willie Green as coach of the year, because this is a brand new coach. That's not his team the first 13 games. His team is in the play-in, and maybe if he had had more run-up to the season somehow or had been here last year, this might be a team that's fighting for an at-birth playoff berth. I mean, this team has played above itself, and I can just point to the coaching because we've seen the improvements internally.
If we are using that as the metric, Ime Udoka would like to have a word in that conversation.
Again, there's another guy, though.
We'll get to the Celtics. We will.
Yeah, and look, there aren't a lot of bums coaching right now in the NBA. There's a renaissance happening, in as far as I'm concerned, in basketball coaching in the NBA. We have people from various backgrounds. I mean, Nick Nurse, we talk about all the crazy places that he's coached, but all these guys, they've coached in the G League. They've been, Ime Udoka was an assistant forever with Greg Popovich. We have such a unique pool of coaching talent. And it's really nice to see them getting a chance to show off a little bit, get a little weird. Basketball is more fun that way.
Coaching got much better once we got rid of Boylan.
Shots fired.
Okay. Now, all right. All right. Next topic here, guys. Okay. So we talked a few weeks ago about clear cut and how it was awful to make clear cut arguments for anyone to win any award because they are, subjective. Now, in your column, Seth, you made a case that Marcus Smart's the defensive player of the year. Now, but you did not say clear cut. And I want to applaud you for it, but I do want to talk about this because I think you have stumbled on to something important. We continue to undervalue point of attack defense and guard defense and wing defense. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago when we talked about the whole defensive player of the year argument. But we have gotten to the point now where we're running out of guys that are bigs to give it to, and we're starting to look at the guards finally. And Seth, I just want to applaud you on leading the charge for Marcus Smart as defense player of the year.
Don't scratch my back too hard, because like part of the reason why, first of all, he bullied me on Twitter. So that's part of it.
So that's basically, you caved.
Yeah.
So
I caved.
It was Twitter. Okay. Yeah. You know what? First off, good job, Marcus.
Yeah.
Cause that's how you get it done. By all means, go for it.
Did he also flop?
No. But I think, big part of the reason is, yes, it's the point of attack defense. Yes, it's the perimeter defense, but it's also the fact that him being the point guard and not just like surviving getting switched onto, but still being an advantage defender, being switched onto all but the biggest players is so important to what Boston does defensively. Like that's, and you know, and part of it is, I don't think in a year where Bam Adebayo is going to play 70 games, I think he probably wins Defensive Player of the Year. I would probably say he should. I think as of right now, he's the betting favorite anyway. So he probably will actually win it. And I have no problem with that. But I think in a year where, Giannis's teammates had been healthy so he could play his sort of more comfortable kind of rover role more, or something like that. I don't think we get to Marcus Smart, but because, you know, Draymond's been out and Bam hasn't played all that much and Giannis has had weird lineup stuff and there's pretty significant voter fatigue with Gobert, and he frankly hasn't been as good this year. He's been
soft in games that matter, man.
I mean they got hammered by the Celtics. We're recording on Thursday. They got just stomped by the Celtics last night. And there's not a lot of shame in that right now because Celtics are doing that to everybody. But like they got carved by Boston.
You're not doing it to Dallas.
That's true.
Well, let's just go into this question then, because since we're on the Celtics though, and Seth continually tweets out, why should I be talked out of Boston winning the championship or coming out of the East? You know, Seth, that's is when you're looking at them, and obviously with one potential defensive player of the year, probably an all defensive guy in Robert Williams. If not, he's going to just miss the cut because it's kind of a stacked field. It's nice to actually have defense matter in the NBA again. You know, you're kind of looking at it like, what do you think of the Celtics, Seth? I mean, do you think you've tweeted it a bunch? Do you think they're going to come out of the East?
So I potted yesterday, Thursday, with Ben Taylor, and I asked him what he thinks about the Celtics. We had an immediate mind meld that we both think that they're coming out of the East. And with between the two of us and Kevin Pelton, I think that the nerd credibility is firmly behind. Like, don't let us down, Boston.
Yeah, you know what though, man. Like, yeah. Here's the issue though. What happens when they run into the Hoopers? Because Kevin Durant is an unsolvable problem for any defense. And I mean, obviously for Brooklyn, it's going to be about elevating their play on the defensive end. And Boston can struggle sometimes to score. That's the part I worry about.
Like, not in games where Tatum plays well.
Here's my pushback to all of you guys. And I listen to these pods, and I honestly, I wish I can retort into all of these. I want to find a way to
we record with the live audience, Mo.
I'm not listening to you.
Yeah,
I talk to you all the damn time. But like when I listen to the other pods, are everybody kind of going nuts about the Celtics and praise them? They've been phenomenal. This is the thing, and this is going to go back to our big question. And this is, I'm going to ask this of you guys too. What do you guys look at as markers going into the playoffs? What is it you're looking at? Like, we've done the conversation where what do teams look at? But what do we look at going into these playoffs? And for me, the big thing I'm looking at is crunch time stats. And that's where I think Boston worries me, right? I think they're short one shooter, and you just look at their stuff. And I'm looking at after January 1 because it's a different team. You can't look at it from the start of the season. I know that's what Seth wanted to come back at me with. And they haven't played a lot of games because they're beating the crap out of everybody. And kudos to them. They've only played 11 games. They're 6-5, and they have a negative 1.8 net rating, right? And when you're looking at those things, there are questions I have in terms of after Tatum, I don't know who I trust to go get their shot one-on-one. Jaylen Brown is getting better. He's not there. He's not at that point. Marcus Smart, still, listen, shooting the piss out of the ball, still a streaky shooter to me. You know, I feel like they're a shooter short. If you have Derek White out there, his jump shot has disappeared into the ether. You know, so maybe you have Peyton Pritchard out there. Like, there's a bunch of questions there. For me, that's my crunch time question for them. And that's my big marker going into the playoffs for all of these teams. And that's the thing. That's why I do not think they're coming out of the Eastern Conference. This might come back to bite me in the ass, but they're probably going to go to the conference finals, but that's about it.
I mean, this is the beauty of this show, Mo, is that we can talk ourselves into and out of stuff. Like, this is great.
Seth tried to sneak one in. Seth tried to sneak one in there with who beats him.
No, well, I don't. It's obviously anyone we say is coming out of the East. Like, the field is the better bet, just because there's so many teams that could. But okay, who do you think it is if it isn't Boston?
It's the Milwaukee Bucks.
It's the Bucks.
Man, this is our city. This is our city, man. We did it, man. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. All right. And I think the Bucks, if they're healthy and as long as nothing crazy happens, I think that they're the best team in the East still. They got the best player.
Well, okay. So here's my question is, this is the way I've started to phrase things. And I recorded a pod with my friend Brett Kermenis earlier this week, and he was making the point that basketball in the NBA is becoming a little more like soccer in that it's become more of a weak link game than a strong link game. Or it's for the last 30 years, basketball has been NBA has been about who has the best guy, and that's all that matters. And in playoffs, especially, it's becoming a little bit more about who's the worst guy on the floor. And so that leads me to Boston has answers. They might not always be the best answers, but Milwaukee still has questions. It's going to be the big three, and then Boston's going to have Tatum, Brown, Smart on the floor, and they can pick between two of four good options.
Well, first off, for me, their only guy that's really going to be able to create one-on-one is Tatum consistently. Yeah. And that's the thing. So like it's Tatum versus picking on everybody else. So look, we get it. When they play the Bucks in the series, which is going to happen at some point, because I think they're the two best teams in the East. You know, you're looking at it and you're going, okay, so they're going to go after Bobby Portis is probably not going to be on the court crunch time. I would bet it would be Lopez, because you look, now that he's back and once he started, you can see the defense coming back there again, him at the rim, and now Giannis gets to play free safety. Scary in that issue, right? But you're going to probably target Lopez because of speed and things and make him switch in that type of situation. They have that hole on the wing. You know, it's going to be anybody between Connaughton, Wesley Matthews, or whoever else we want to throw out there for them. And it's not great options there. But my question to you is, you know, when you look at it with the Bucks, they have three guys that can get their own shot at the end of games. And to me, the Bucks and to me, the Celtics have won.
Middleton destroys the Bucks.
If you want to go on Bucks Twitter after a loss, that's when you're going to see a lot of Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton's killing
Chris
the
Middleton
Bucks.
He destroys the Celtics somehow. I don't know why. He just does. We can't account for that.
You know, but I think that's to me my big thing. And this isn't a shot at Boston, by the way. I love what you guys have done. It's fun to actually get to watch you again, because the first 2 months of the season's freaking unwatchable. You were so bad. It's fun to watch this. It's fun to watch this growth and everything. I just think at the end of the day, they're just going to fall a little bit short, and it's going to come down to crunch time. And I think that's where we're going to have those issues. And Seth, you're 100% right. And it's not something that the league's been trending to. It's been that way for a lot longer than people want to realize. We've been looking, when I was in the league, which matchup can we pick apart? What switch can we get? And I'm old. So that's the thing there about the weak links. And you're right. There's not a lot of them. But there's not a lot of teams that are going to be able to hold up when the trio for the Bucks, and they run that little three-man game that they run at the end of games. That's going to be tough to deal with.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful, designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I want to circle back to the question you asked about markers for playoff success. What are the things that we're paying attention to? Because I do think we're at the time where, especially given the standings and how tight some of these games are and how tightly contested they are, we can pick up quite a bit from some of these head-to-head matchups. And not so much, like we talked about previously, not so much the individual head-to-head matchups, but how these teams are performing against other teams that are also trying really hard. I do think right now we're getting more information than we usually get at this time. You guys tend to agree with that?
I do. You know, we were talking pre-show. You guys were like, there's been some research that like the first segment of a season, the first 20 games of a season, is generally more predictive of the playoffs than the last 20 games. Because I mean, we see that where, you know, let's just say that the variation in how teams are playing, whether they're resting guys or whatever, it generally comes into play. We don't have that this year. Like, first of all, the first like half of the season was kind of a mess availability wise. And as you're mentioning, like, there's so much jockeying for position. There's so much, so bunched up that we're getting, it really does seem like we're getting more, and maybe I'm being prisoner of the moment here, but it seems like we're getting a high level, intense matchup between two teams that style themselves as contenders just about every night.
There's pressure in these games, right? And it feels like it's not playoffs, but it feels like playoff pressure. And I think that is giving us so much more information right now than we normally get, because this is closer to how the teams are going to play in the playoffs than in December when they had all those 10-day guys out there.
So I think the thing that really drives this home to me is usually, like, you know, this time of year, we're watching the first couple of rounds of the NCAA tournament. That's not like the quality of basketball is lower, but the intensity is. And then you go back to a regular season NBA games and it's just like not that. I haven't felt that this year. Like, I went from like the last game last Sunday was the TCU and Arizona. And that was like a crazy intense overtime game. And then you start watching the NBA game starting on Monday and it doesn't feel like there's a drop off. But and that's a change from most years around this time, I feel like.
I think part of that is just look at the standings, right? And to what you were saying, Dave. Right, the Eastern Conference is a four-team race to the number one seed. It's a 1.5 game difference, you know. And you know, we're going to get into a little bit of that stuff too. Chicago's up on Cleveland by a game. Cleveland's up on Toronto just outside the play-in tournament by a game. Right? That, I mean, not completely out of the realm of possibility. Chicago slips all the way into the play-in tournament. Like, it's not. I mean, like, this is, these games freaking matter. You know, when you have jockeying in the Western Conference, Dallas and Utah are tied at the 4-5 seed. Nobody's touching Phoenix. Phoenix is the one team that's screwing up my argument. So screw
might be
you,
the story
Phoenix.
Of the season, by the way, when it's all said and done.
Right. But, you know, you have Memphis 2 games up on the Warriors, and really kind of 3 games if you consider the fact the tiebreaker after head-to-head is division titles, and Memphis is going to win the division, which abolished divisions, but that's a whole other pod for another day. Minnesota's trying to get out of the play-in tournament. They're a game and a half out. Like, all of these games carry significance. So it's, you know, the Lakers
and some young teams that are good, right? Like, that's the other thing is I think that, like, young players, there is no coast for, like, Minnesota doesn't have a coast button. It's cool.
They can't.
Yeah. Not anymore. It's gone, man. It's a different vibe.
No team but Phoenix can have a coast button now going into the end of the season.
And Phoenix isn't coasting. Like, they, like, you know, last night, like, there was close Minnesota, Phoenix was a close game, and Phoenix was just like, last 5 minutes, enough of this foolishness. Thank you for coming, young fellas. And just kind of, and even without Chris Paul, just like, you know, as they've been doing. I mean, and Devin Booker.
They basically said, now let us show you why we are 17 and a half games ahead of you in the standings. That's how wild. That's
like they've been.
They're a wins machine, guys. They just make wins.
Okay. But back to the question.
Yeah.
Why are they not the overwhelming favorite to win the title?
No, they are in my world. Yeah. In my house,
yeah.
They
yeah,
are.
Yeah, they are.
You want to go again back to my marker of crunch time, right? They have a 30.5 net rating in crunch time, right? And this is according to the NBA.com stats. Guys, they are 29-6 in crunch time games.
Now, normally I would almost go the other way on that and say that that's sort of like that there's some unsustainable, but the fact that they are tending to go into crunch time, you know, not 5 point, like not barely making it up within 5 points. And also the fact that they have, you know, you talked about like Boston, who's their closer. Milwaukee has 3. I don't think any of Milwaukee's 3 are as good in that, like, get a bucket with your ball in your hands last 5 minutes, last 3 minutes as Paul and Booker are.
Phoenix is as close to a perfect basketball team that's built somewhat conventionally as you can find. They have shooting. They have defense. I mean, they have a big who can – I mean, his jump hook is as almost as good as his dunk.
Well, because we just see it so much more. He doesn't – it seems sometimes like he doesn't want to dunk.
I mean, if you're shooting 68% on a little jump hook, by all means, let's do that. Now, I do want to talk about specifically about the Miami Heat. Because they are the one seed right now. And I think it's a completely different story than the Phoenix Suns. We all believe in the Phoenix Suns. I don't think any of us believe in the Miami Heat. Am I wrong here?
I want to get back to what I said earlier about questions, not answers. Because who has the ball in their hands at the end of the game? Is it Tyler Hero? Do we trust that? And who's on the floor for them at the end of the games? Like, I think we've seen, okay, if they need to have Tyler Hero on the floor for offense, I think we know what happens on the other end. Like, that is a bright sign that we were talking about who would they play earlier this week where it was just like every single action down the stretch was find his guy, get him in action. It was
Philly. Yeah. Without Joel Embiid and
that's right.
James
Harden.
That's right.
They were running offense.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah, they ran every action at Tyler Hero. They went 9 of 12 in the fourth quarter against Tyler Hero individual defense. Now, obviously, that's not exact because there's a lot of fudging numbers there, but they attacked him on every possession, and that was the difference in the game. That's how they won the game. But Miami has to play Tyler Hero.
They either have a solid five man defensive unit or they have shooting on the floor. They can't have both.
And this was the concern I had with last summer when they put the team together. Was that how do you marry these two? I don't know how they could bring them together. And you know, PJ Tucker is having a nice season shooting the ball, but PJ Tucker is not a shooter.
Not after the All-Star break, Dave. His numbers have fallen off to 23% on threes after shooting 40 something. Like that's the difference. But like the crunch time stuff, and this is again exactly what Seth's saying, because that's a big problem on defense. And him saying putting the ball in Hero's hands. Yo, they have no idea what they want to do on offense in close games. I'm watching that game and I broke it down on Twitch the next day, and it was appalling watching their offense, because it's like, okay, they hunted Tyler Hero on the other end, and the Miami Heat chose not to hunt on go after Furkan Korkmaz, right? Like, you know, put him in pick and rolls, right? And go at that. Like, instead, you know, they're constantly going at other guys, and I'm watching this going like, you know, Korkmaz is on the court right there. He's not a good defender. Go take him.
And we talked about this a little bit with how much can we take away from individual matchups, and especially because we mentioned specifically Miami and how they'll throw stuff away, won't use things, run weird lineups. I don't know, man. I would love to chalk this up to they weren't going to show any of their cards, but I just don't believe it. And in particular, because of the blow up they had on the bench with Jimmy Butler the other night, clearly, like, I mean, there's frustration. And I'm not saying that stuff is abnormal. That happens, man. I don't think it's a big deal. But there is clearly some frustration with the way things are going. And they haven't even. They're 6-4 in their last 10. The sky is not falling for the Heat. But I don't like what I see out of them.
The sky was never up for me, for the Heat. Like, let's just put it that way. You know, like the sky. You know, when you're talking about, they're just trying not to show their cards. They don't even know what their cards are. That's the thing. Like it's been a problem for them all year, right? And it's a lot of it has been depending on Jimmy Butler down the stretch. That doesn't scare me. If I'm another team, that doesn't scare me at all. Like there's not a team I feel like that's really afraid of Jimmy going in isolation on the wing, right? Like you're going to live with that. If he makes shots, he makes shots, but you'll live with it, you know? And I think those are the things there. And I just think they play really solid offense for 3.5 quarters. And when it comes to nut cutting, Tom, they're not there.
I think we agree that Spo is the best coach in the league. I don't think that's a controversial statement. And I think that their record is in some way a reflection of, they haven't really had their team for a lot of this year. And, you know, oh, wow. And on one level, wow, it's impressive they have this record because he's, you know, throwing together Max Strus and Gabe Vincent and Caleb Martin and getting these guys. And but I think that sort of plays into, like, you have, you know, Kyle Lowry has been a guy and he might not be anymore. And Jimmy Butler's been a guy. But they haven't worked that through this season because they haven't had this available. And that was, you know, when they put this team together, that was sort of I was actually worried that they would about getting to the playoffs with like their main four guys all healthy. And it seems like at this point, it seems like that's going to happen. But all the stuff that's happened in between means that they haven't worked out how they play in these situations yet. And trying to do it on the fly does lead to, you know, some frustration and some losses they don't think they should have. And yeah, there's worries there.
Seth, let me just ask you, what's your marker for looking at the playoff teams going into this stretch right now?
This is another thing that like the weirdness of the first bit of the season is thrown off because is basically performance against 50 plus win teams is, you know, as sort of that top tier of the league, which, you know, you can define it any different way you want. That's sort of that's the quick and dirty way I've done it. So I don't have to like pick a side who's good and not. Usually that's been, you know, reasonably predictive of who does well in the postseason. Unfortunately, this year, so many of those matchups are kind of sullied by who had their team available when they played. You know, I was a little slow to really get on board with Phoenix because I looked at that and like in those matchups, Phoenix almost always had their guys in a lot of situations. There are plenty of teams that didn't. And they had like among the better differentials in that area. And so it's like, okay. But at this point, the body of evidence is so overwhelming and they've done so well without Chris Paul that.
Well, okay. How about a team that isn't on the level of the Suns, but has a superstar and they have performed better with him out. And then of course, better is relative. He missed like 17 games. John Morant, when he misses games, man, the Memphis Grizzlies just still win. They figure it out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Does that like, – what do you do with that?
Again, not playing bad players because Memphis has 10, 11 good players.
But when the playoffs start, they're not going to have 10 or 11, right? Like, so the margins in which they have better players on the court, like their 9th and 10th guys are probably the best 9th and 10th guys in the league. Maybe.
And they probably have the best backup point guard in the league, perhaps in Tyus Jones. So that certainly like softens the blow a little bit of when Jaw's out. But like in the playoffs, it's like, oh, that's neat. You have a good backup point guard. Like, you know,
you're not winning without Jaw in the playoffs. Sorry. Like I see. And it's often used as a way to denigrate. Right. Like it's like, oh, we got to knock Jaw down a notch because Memphis wins without him. But the truth is, man, like, yeah, they play good basketball. They got a really good coach and they're consistent. That's how you win overall. But Ja Morant is the straw that stirs the drink. He's the guy who is going to eat up the Utah Jazz in the paint. He's the guy who, you know, is going to put pressure on Golden State defense. They don't have anybody else that does the jaw stuff. And that's the playoffs.
And I'm going to steal a Seth moniker here, but they got great team Mo, right? Like, they got a whole lot of energy. That you watch them watching that game against Brooklyn and Ja sitting there, he's celebrating with everything, right? The all the shots of the bench over and over again were them celebrating somebody else's accomplishments and things like that. Like, the energy with that team and everything that they have, it's so much fun to watch. And it's really kind of pulls you in, and they're playing well. I mean, not enough is talked about Jaren Jackson Jr.'s defense. You know, I know Seth awarded that to Marcus Smart, and I'm sure that's perfectly fine. And you know, he kind of got bullied into it, but by Marcus Smart again. But Jaren Jackson Jr. has a serious case for Defensive Player of the Year with the way this season's.
I don't disagree.
For narrative reasons. So if Jaren Jackson had tweeted at you, you might have changed it. Yo. Guys need to start listening to the pod. We're telling you how to get the awards.
But I don't actually have a vote, so who cares?
They don't need to know that. I'm just trying to improve our listener base here. Seth, come on.
Next week, I need you to write the case for Jaren Jackson as Defensive Player of the Year, just for me. Because, you know, my legacy's on the line here with Jaren Jackson. It's very important to me that Jaren Jackson's yeah. defense is given the accolades that it deserves. He has been fantastic this year. And this is a guy who's benefited from playing in the league, getting better. The officiating being different has helped him because he is able to use his body in the ways that you're meant to be able to do on defense. And now he doesn't have the foul troubles to the same degree.
He's also like, I think that the officiating stuff has kind of normalized a little over the course of the year, but I think also he used to also just pick up, like, they weren't like, oh, that's a bad call. It was like, why is your hand there? Fouls.
Steph Curry fouls.
Yeah. And you can't do that. Like, as a guard, you can get away with that. As a big, like, you're just in the danger too often. So for me, the knock, if it is on Jaren Jackson, is they're good in stretches when they play him at the five. I don't think that he can hold up still as a full-time five, largely because his rebounding is still pretty mediocre. So that, like, you know, he's sort of getting the benefit of what Giannis hasn't had all year. And he can play this, like, rover role. And then end of the game, they go smaller. Like, was it last week against the Knicks where basically, like, he seemed like he blocked about 17 shots in the fourth quarter? Like in that end of the game when the other team goes small too and they're not really trying to offensive rebound, you can do that for stretches. So I think that like, he's certainly there or thereabouts. But, like, that, so that's my case against him.
But also, like, it's also, though, like, it's everybody else, right? Steven Adams has fit like a glove, and he's doing exactly what you're talking about when he plays at the five for this team. You know, Desmond Bain has taken another step in progression. We talked about Tyus Jones. Like, this is just a very well-rounded team in everything that they have. Like, guys, they're going to the conference finals, in my opinion.
I think so, too. I think Phoenix should beat them.
In the conference finals.
In the conference finals, yeah. But listen, I don't know. I mean,
I think they match up pretty well with Golden State. I think they match up pretty well with Golden State.
I think I agree with Mo there. I think they beat Golden State. I think that especially after the Steph injury, I think Memphis is just, I don't know, man. It feels like Oklahoma City.
And he's not universally my favorite player. But I think we have decent history of Dylan Brooks as a guy who knows how to bother Steph. And even with Klay coming back and Jordan Poole improving, like, the Warriors still seem pretty damn dependent on Steph to have any kind of efficient offense.
Yeah, and part of that is, you know, I don't even like saying Klay's back or anything like that, right? Like, he's back next year.
Yeah.
This year is just, let me get my body to figure out how to play NBA basketball again. Like, this is why I was really worried.
He's been better than we could have recently expected, but he hasn't been
Klay. And the expectations on him were wild to me of, like, once we get Klay back, we're rolling. And I love when they start that with the James Wiseman stuff. I'm like, y'all, he hasn't played 20 something games. Come on. Like, stop it. But this is,
don't play your bad players.
Okay. Yeah, I have a lot of questions about the Warriors because it's just Poole's on a hot streak, but he was on a real cold streak. What do you do when that happens again? Wiggins has not been the same Wiggins since the All-Star break. Like, I have a lot of we always talk about who has answers, who has questions. Right now, for me, this Warriors team has a lot of questions.
I've officially moved the Warriors below Memphis and down in that tier with like Denver and Dallas, where, yeah, maybe if everything goes great, yeah. But I think that it's Phoenix, and I got Memphis right behind them. Just they've just got so like you said, Mo, the team momentum does matter here, and in particular because of how good they are. This is not just a team riding momentum. They're riding momentum and also being a damn good team.
I do want to push back a little. That's still the Golden State still above Dallas and Denver in that area for me. I don't think
a lot of stuff has to go right. Like I think that, you know, the Steph injury question is so huge for me.
I like Denver, I don't think belongs on that level. I think that Golden State and Dallas, like, you know, the Golden State probably like home court, whatever, they probably have a kinder run. But I don't like if you want to say Golden State is like better heading into the playoffs than Dallas, sure, fine. Are they like a tier better? I don't know. I frankly don't understand how Dallas is winning all the games they are. But at this point, you just have to say, well, they are. And so, you know, let's go with it.
Actually, the last 2 weeks, they came down to earth a little bit. They were like 4-3. Their defense was worse. Their offense wasn't as good. But that I think that Dallas is finding a way to win some close games. And that goes to Mo's point about what you're looking for heading into the playoffs. Do you have a guy that can get you a bucket? Are you able to score in crunch time? And having Luka Doncic is, you know, I dare say, a luxury, guys. I think that's a guy you might want to have. And Spencer Dinwiddie being a perfect partner next to him has worked out in a way that I don't even think anybody would have expected ever.
Yeah, no, we've talked about it, you know, and I wrote about it. But just the fact the Mavs are able to kind of get away from heliocentric offenses, you know, for a good part of the games and things like that, it rests Luka. So now you have a rested Luka coming at you in crunch time, and good luck.
Rested and in shape. Rested and in shape. It has just been a different season for Dallas since he had that ankle injury. And I think if you go and look, it's like January 2nd. I think he came back from that and they took off. And Jason Kidd, I'm sure this is something we'll talk about this summer, but very impressed by the results of the coaching, whether it's the coaching or not, the results are undeniable. You guys got anything else as we wrap up? No,
just go check out my Twitch stream.
That's right. That's twitch.tv/ Mo. What was it? What's the URL?
It's twitch.tv/modakhil_NBA.
There it is.
I do have to pass on to Mo that Ben Taylor says he'll see you around the way.
Tell Ben anytime he wants it, he can come get it. Anytime. You think I'm afraid of him? Ben, I'm calling you out. Let's go. WWF style, all that UFC style. I'm calling you out. Ben, anytime you want it, you come get it. I'm ready.
We've been in the trenches on this pod, Ben.
Good promo.
That's going to do it for this week, folks. For Seth and Mo, I'm Dave. Keep it locked in to the Athletic NBA Show, the best podcast you can find on the internet.
Definitely don't overthink basketball.
Yeah, my book has got a hole in it. Yeah, my book has got a hole in it. Yeah, my book has got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Well, I'm standing on the corner with a bucket in my hand. I'm waiting for a woman and ain't got no man. Cause my bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Well, I went up on the mountain. I looked down in the sea. I seen the crabs and the fishes doing the bebop beep. God, my bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.